Chumash, we read about the mitzvah to fast on Yom Kippur. It only appears in the form of a mitzvah saseh. The inisim es nafshe sechem. It never says explicitly that one who eats on Yom Kippur is in violation of an avera. That says in the Mishnah. The Mishnah Maseches Makis says that whoever, the third parak in Makis, is Elohim Haloikin, whoever violates an avera deserves to be punished by the Bezna. If a person doesn't put on tzitzis or tefillin, you don't punish him for not fulfilling a mitzvah saseh. But if he does an avera, then he gets Malkus, and the Mishnah lists off among those who deserve Malkus, one who eats on Yom Kippur. So the Gemara starts fishing around the Maseches Yuma. Where is there a pasuk in Chumash that says that there's an Avera to eat on Yom Kippur? So the Gemara discovers, the Gemara works out Bekoshi, there is a pasuk. We're not sure exactly what the pasuk is, but there is a pasuk. The Gemara has one pasuk, the Rambam has a different pasuk. It makes a big difference whether it's only a mitzvah sasei or it's a mitzvah slasei as well. Big difference is how far is a person obligated to strain himself in order to keep the mitzvahs in the Torah. So in the Shulchan Aruch in Yerideya, it says that when it comes to violating an Avera, let's say Chilul Shabbos, you're only permitted to be Mechal Shabbos, or to eat Chazit, to eat Treifas, that's an Avera. So you're not permitted to do an Avera unless this is a situation of Sakonis Nefoshes, or Sofek Sakonis Nefoshes, or Sfek Sveke. It has to be Sakonis Nefoshes. The person is concerned that he may lose his life. Anything less than that, you're not permitted to violate an Avera. But as far as fulfilling a mitzvah saseh, if by fulfilling the mitzvah you're going to get sick, so you're really not mechuyev to fulfill the mitzvah saseh. You're not mechuyev to spend more than chaymish, more than one-fifth of your total savings in order to fulfill a mitzvah. Let's say a person doesn't have a shofar. So he should have figured something out in advance. Let's say it's Erev Rosh Hashanah, he doesn't have a shofar, and the only way for him to hit kir shofar is to buy a plane ticket and to go to the closest Jewish community, which will cost him a fortune of money, and will have to spend more than one-fifth of his total savings. So the Shulchan Aruch says that you're not mechuyev to spend more than chomesh, not mechuyev to spend more than one-fifth of your total savings in order to fulfill a mitzvah saseh. That's considered hon rav. More than one-fifth of your savings is considered hon rav. So Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva, and other poskim say the same before Moshe. Let's say if a person will fulfill a mitzvah, this will cause him to get sick. Moshe, as a Jew, a person is not 100% stable, and if he listens to tekiyas, this will shake him up, and he will regress in his recovery. In his mental illness, this will cause him to regress. So Moshe Feinstein says, not mechuyev to listen to tekiyas shofar. The din that you're not mechuyev to sit in sukkah, if you're going to get sick, there's a din, amitztar potam in a sukkah, that's a local din in Hilchas Sukkah, because teshuv came to duru. You're only obligated to sit in the sukkah in the same type of a fashion that you would sit and eat in your kitchen. Let's say if it would be freezing in the kitchen, freezing, well, normally eat in the dining room, let's say. So if it's freezing in the dining room, but in the den or in the living room, the steam is on. So you wouldn't eat in the dining room. We're not such yekis that we're makbid, you have to dafke eat in the dining room and study in the den and relax in the living room. If it's freezing in the dining room, so if it's freezing in the bedroom, so we'll sleep in the living room, we'll sleep in the dining room. So the sukkah has the same din, teshva kain tadu, you're not mechuyev to sit in the sukkah, it's going to be extremely uncomfortable. That's a local din in Hilchas Sukkah, but the poskim say that even on the first night, that many hold that mitzvah is chayv in sukkah, but you're not mechuyev to get sick from sleeping in the sukkah. That's a general din in all the mitzvahs. That applies to all the mitzvahs. Just like one is not obligated to spend more than one-fifth of his total savings in order to fulfill a mitzvah of lulav, in order to fulfill a mitzvah of shofar, so one is not obligated to make himself sick in order to fulfill the mitzvahs. So the shaila is how difficult a condition does a person have in order that he should be permitted to eat on Yom Kippur? So a lot of people think if it's an emergency, if he's very sick, so he's allowed to eat on Yom Kippur. He's not going to eat, he has some nervous condition, he's not going to eat, he's going to be scratching himself and falling apart. But if there's no sakana to his life, so then the Mishnah says he's not permitted to eat. If there's a suffix sakana, a slight suffix sakana, 1% chance that he may lose his life, a sveksveka that he may lose his life, that's called suffix sakana. But if there's no, the doctors don't think that there's any sakonis nefesh, just because it's going to be extremely uncomfortable, so then strictly speaking, there's no hetter to eat on Yom Kippur. That's not considered a suffix sakonis.
But does Yom Kippur allow for an asay?
Oh, so that's what the Gemara says, that Yom Kippur is not only in the Chumash, it only appears as a mitzvah saseh. V'inisma snapshe sech, no, if it would only be a mitzvah saseh, so we would have said, no, if it's too difficult, so you're not mechuyev to make yourself sick. in order to fulfill a mitzvah saseh. But the Mishnah says in Makis that one who eats on Yom Kippur gets Malkis. So the Gemara says, you see from the Mishnah that our tradition has it, that eating on Yom Kippur is not just a mitzvah. If you eat on Yom Kippur, it's an aveira. If you fast on Yom Kippur, harei zekiyei mitzvah saseh, it's a kiyama mitzvah. And if you eat on Yom Kippur, you have violated an aveira. So therefore, we're so strict about this. That's why the whole topic of pikuach nefesh, that one is allowed to eat non-kosher food, you're allowed to drive to the hospital on Shabbos, you're allowed to violate most of the laws in the Torah, whenever there's a sakana, sofek sakana, svek svek of a sakana. The whole discussion comes up in the last perek in Yuma. In Mishnah Yuma, there are 8 prokim. So the first 7 prokim, the bulk of the mesichta, 90% of the mesichta is all about the special korbanos that were brought on Yom Kippur. And the last perek, the last 10 blot, are about the laws that are relevant for us, about fasting on Yom Kippur, wearing shoes, and so on. The Chamisha Inuyim, the 5 prohibitions, that the 5 things we're not permitted to do on Yom Kippur. So the whole discussion of Pikuach Nefesh, that is Deicha Shabbos and Deicha Kol HaTarkula, the whole discussion is in the last Perek HaMaseches Yom, because it came up every Yom Kippur in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, the first Yom Kippur, when they were given the Torah at HaSinai, on Shavuot. So the next Yom Kippur, there were Chodesh came who weren't allowed to fast on Yom Kippur. So Moshe Rabbeinu had a paskin then that the din is that Pikuach Nefesh is Deicha Yom Kippur. In the history books, they write as if this din was not known until the days of the Chashmonaim, because in the book of Maccabees, which was translated from the Greek, which was translated from the original Hebrew, it's a translation of a translation. So officially it says there that till the days of the Chashmonaim, they wouldn't wage war on Shabbos. And then the rabbis decided that since it's a Sofik Pikuach Nefesh, if the enemy is going to attack you on Shabbos, see, someone may lose his life, so Pikuach Nefesh is Deicha Shabbos, so you're permitted to go to wage war on Shabbos. So they presented as if this din was developed in the days of the Second Temple. The Chashmonaim were towards the end of the period of the Second Temple. How can that be? In the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, they let people die on Yom Kippur, and they let people die on Shabbos. If a woman was going to have a baby, they wouldn't ride it, they wouldn't take it to the hospital. It wouldn't be Mechal Shabbos. That's ridiculous. So it must be that there were certain aspects of Pikuach Nefesh, that every Macham is considered Pikuach Nefesh. That's not necessarily the case. Let's say one country wants to wage war against the other country. They're not interested in killing the citizens. They just want to take over the sovereignty of the area. And it'll be peaceful. So that's what was Neschadish in the days of the Chashmonaim, that any Mohammed, even if it seems to be a peaceful Mohammed, but they want to take over my country, that also has the status of a Sofik Pikuach Nefesh. But the din of Pikuach Nefesh, we assume, was from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, the first Yom Kippur. They had the people, that Cholim Uzgenim, who had to have a Psak, what they're permitted to do, what they're obligated to do. So the din always was like that, that Pikuach Nefesh is Deicha Yom Kippur. But anything less than Pikuach Nefesh is not Deicha. Many years ago, when the yeshiva started Einstein Medical School, so people were asking Rabbi Soloveitchik, what does he say about the fact that yeshiva has a medical school? So at that time, that year, he printed a series of, I think, 11 essays in the Yiddish newspaper, the Morgen Journal at that time, on different issues facing orthodoxy. So one of them was about, does the yeshiva do orthodoxy, does orthodoxy really need a medical school? So he starts off the essay in Yiddish that he wasn't consulted in advance. What he would have said l'chatchila is one question, but we're talking b'dievet, and we know the halacha distinguishes between l'chatchila and b'dievet, so we're talking about b'dievet. What does he have to say? So he says b'dievet, he thinks that it's a very good thing that we have a medical school, because we hardly had any religious doctors. How can a religious Jew, the whole reason why they started Einstein Medical School, because the Goyish medical schools weren't allowing any Jews to be admitted. So Dr. Belkin's Balabatim felt that we have to start a Jewish medical school. So he said, we always had to rely on the non-Jewish doctors to tell us who's allowed to eat on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur and so on. So the non-Jewish doctors, they don't have an understanding of what it means, Pikuach Nefesh, and, you know, an emergency. A person is sick, it's an emergency. So the doctors will insist that all the people have to eat. He says, now we're going to have B'nai Torah who will be from the doctors, and they'll understand what it means, a Sofek Sakana, Svek Svek of a Sakana, or a Choyla She'en Bo Sakana. The doctors will know how to tell the Rabbanim what the din is, in which case the Cholim should eat, in which case the Cholim should not eat. The Gemara derives from the Psukim that there are 5 Inuim, Chamisha Inuim. One of them is, one is not permitted to eat or drink on Yom Kippur, then one is not permitted to have marital relations on Yom Kippur, one is not permitted to wear leather shoes on Yom Kippur, one is not permitted to bathe, to wash the body, or to smear with oil, sicha. The Gemara derives all 5 from a pasuk, so you get the impression as if all 5 are minatar. But then the Gemara makes a statement, what if you violate these laws? What if a person does take a shower on Yom Kippur? What if a person does wear leather shoes on Yom Kippur? The Gemara says the only time there's a punishment of kares, kares is a very serious punishment, the only time there's a punishment of kares is if the person violated achil ushtia. So the din is that if a person ate b'shogig on Yom Kippur, he'll have to bring a korban chatos, because whoever violates an aver b'shogig, which if violated the mezid, would have been punished with kares, so b'shogig, the din requires that he should bring a korban chatos. But if one violates the other prohibitions, a person showers on Yom Kippur b'shogig, a person wears shoes b'shogig, so then he's not chayv kares. So the Tosfos wonders, why do we distinguish between eating and drinking on the one hand and the other afori nuyim, if they all learned that from the psukim, and it says v'nismas nafshesechem is one pasuk. See that everything should have chorus. So if five prohibitions are included in the concept of inui, so all five should have the punishment of chorus. So this is what leads the Balei HaTosfos to understand that the other inuim are only midirabbanan. The only thing that the pasuk that's minatara, the only thing the pasuk is really referring to, is the fast. One shouldn't eat or drink, and the wearing the shoes, and the other inuim is only midirabbanan. The Rambam does not agree with the Tosfos. The simple reading of the Rambam is like the simple reading of the Gemara, that all the five are a biblical prohibition. And the Rambam doesn't consider this a kasha. How can you take one lav and split it and say that on one part of the lav there's going to be kares, another part of the lav there won't be kares? The Rambam has in Hilchas Macholas Asuras, the Rambam writes, there's a biblical prohibition against eating dam. You're not permitted to eat blood. It's in Chumash, it's in Issa Deraisa. So certain parts of the blood, if you eat it, you chayv kares. And other kinds of blood, you're not chayv kares. If you have dam shahaneshama yotzebo, the blood that gushes out when they shecht an animal, and that loss of that blood is what causes the animal to lose its life. So that blood, you chayv kares. If you drink dam halev, the dam that's in the heart, after you kill the animal, so you drink the dam halev, there's an issur kares. But if you take a piece of meat and you don't salt it and you squeeze out the blood, that's dam ha'evarim, the blood in the capillaries, not the blood in the arteries. So that's an issur min haTorah, but there's no punishment of kares on that. So the Rambam says you can have one pasuk called dam lo sechelu, which includes all kinds of dam. And on some of the dam, there will be a punishment of curse, and others, there won't be a punishment of curse. It's not so surprising that you have one pasuk, v'nismas nafshesechem, which is a mitzvah saseh, which includes all the five forms of inuyim, and the loisesek, on nevesh ha-shalosin, there's an averi. You're not allowed to violate these inuyim. And on some of them, you have a punishment of curse, and others, you don't have a punishment of curse. You see, we pointed out that with respect to the how serious an emergency situation does it have to be that one should be permitted to eat. So the fact that we have established that eating on Yom Kippur is not only it's a mitzvah to fast, but it's an avera to eat. So there it's crucial to emphasize that it's an avera to eat. On the other hand, there's one area of halacha where we emphasize the fact that not only is it an avera to eat, it's a mitzvah to fast on Yom Kippur. That's as far as chinuch is concerned. The Mishnah says that there is a din of chinuch. You have to be mechanech the children who are old enough that they should sit in sukkah, they should eat matzah, leil pesach, they should fulfill the mitzvahs men haTorah, the mitzvahs men derabbanan, and even the menhogim. The Gemara says you have to be mechanech children on menhogim as well. So the Shaila is, what about fasting on Yom Kippur? So a lot of people have the practice that the last three taneisim before the child becomes Yom Kippur, whatever the last three fast days happen to be, so you train them in chinuch to observe the last three fast days. This doesn't correspond living or dead to what it says in Shulchan Aruch. No source at all. Nobody agrees with that in Shulchan Aruch. That's a common minhag, but in Shulchan Aruch it doesn't say like that. It says in Shulchan Aruch that there's only a din of chinuch for children on fasting on Yom Kippur, no din of chinuch fasting on Tisha B'Av, and even if the child is going to become bar mitzvah tomorrow, the day after Tisha B'Av, there's no chinuch, he doesn't have to fast the day before. The only thing that's a din is if Tisha B'Av falls out on a Shabbos, and no one fasts on Shabbos, everybody's fasting on Sunday, and the kid becomes bar mitzvah on Sunday, so that's a deal. The Avnei Nez has a discussion. Everybody, the whole world is fasting on Sunday. So is the Chiv really chal to fast on Tisha B'Av, but it's Tashlumen? So on Tisha B'Av the kid was a katan, he wasn't Mechuyiv, so he's not Mechuyiv to make Tashlumen. Or should I say no, whenever in that year when Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos, that was the initial Takonis Chachamim that you should fast on the 10th of Av. So on the 10th of Av he is Bar Mitzvah, so that's a deal. That's a Shaila. In Poskim, how to Poskim. It could be that we make a leaven on that. But if his Bar Mitzvah is on the 11th of Av, there's no chinuch on fasting on Tisha B'Av. I just met Talmid Chacham, a grandson of Rabbi Yankov Kamenetsky. So he was telling me that when he was a child, about 8 years old, so he, in the middle of the summer, he insisted he wanted to fast on Tisha B'Av. So his father told him, we don't fast, children don't have to fast. He insisted, no, he's going to fast. So he said, go speak to the Zayda. So he put Rabbi Yanka Kamenetsky on the telephone. So he tells his grandfather, he wants to fast, he's old enough, he's healthy enough. So the grandfather said, children only do mitzvahs for chinuch in order that next year they should do it right. He said, you don't want to fast next year on Tishba. Nobody wants to fast next year on Tishba. We want to have the Beis HaMikdash. We don't want to prepare this year for next year. Those who are adults have to fast this year. But those who are ktanim shouldn't prepare for next year. They never prepare in advance to observe Avelis on Tisha B'Av. So in Shulchan Aruch it says, all of the poskim say, the Mishnah Berurah has so many chumras, this he's not machmi. He says, children before bar mitzvah don't fast, not on Tisha B'Av, not on some Gedalia, not on Asar B'Tavis, not on Shivasa B'Tamas, Tainis Esther maybe. Tainis Esther is a Tainis Shal Simcha. That's what to discuss. Mishnah Berurah doesn't talk about that. That's room for negotiation. But the Tainios, the fast days that are observed, that of Avelis, there's no din of chinuch on those. The only time that there's a din of chinuch on fasting, for sure, is the Mishnah says, fasting on Yom Kippur. And the Gemara discusses at what age does a chinuch begin. So the Gemara says a girl becomes bas mitzvah at the age of 12, and a boy becomes bas mitzvah at the age of 13. So if the child is healthy, most normal children in America are very healthy. There are exceptions to the rule, but most normal children are heavy and they're sturdy enough, they're strong enough to fast. So the din requires that 2 years before bar mitzvah or bas mitzvah, they have to fast the whole day. And two years before, they should fast a half a day. Unless they're not up to it, unless they're not healthy, is a different story. Unless it's some psychological block, a mental block, why they're afraid to fast or something, then you have to ask your local Orthodox rabbi. But under normal conditions, 2 years before bar mitzvah, the din requires they should fast the whole day. And two years before, they should fast the half a day. And before that, in the Shulchan Aruch, they quote from the Talmud Yerushalmi that we don't permit the children to fast because we're afraid. They may cause chashash sakon. Even though the child is very healthy, we're concerned that it may cause a chashash sakon.
Half day means the night until chatzot, the night and then the day until chatzot?
Right. Okay. Right. You don't give them breakfast and then they go home, make kiddush. They go home and that's a shaila, where the children who are reading on Yom Kippur, should they say Kiddush or not? So that's what they have in the biography of the Avnei Nezer, the Socha Chavarev. When he was a little boy, so he went home and he ate after Shacharis, and came back to shul, so his father was a Rav also. So his father asked, Nu Avremelid, did you say Kiddush? So he was very sharp as a young child, so he said, no, the Gemara says that children have to do all the mitzvahs for chinuch to prepare for next year. To prepare for after they'll become bar mitzvah. After I become bar mitzvah, I'm not going to make kiddush on Yom Kippur. I'm not going to be eating. So I'm not going to say kiddush on Yom Kippur. So he said he didn't say kiddush. Yeah. That's a shaila. Let's say a person is an adult, a 90-year-old person. The doctor says he has to eat on Yom Kippur. Should he say kiddush in advance or not? So most assume you don't say kiddush on Yom Kippur. There's no kiddush. The chacham would have a misakin kiddush for Yom Kippur. So there is a problem regarding the din of chinuch. The Mishnah talks about chinuch, children sitting in sukkah, children eating matzah on Pesach night, children fasting on Yom Kippur. Then on the other hand, the Gemara talks about a kot noichal nevelus, a child before bar mitzvah can eat non-kosher food, and we don't have to scream at him. Then bezin moichem biyodeh, the bezin lets him get away with it. So what happened to the din of chinuch? All the Rishonim ask, isn't there a din of chinuch? So there are two. The Gemara doesn't explain what happened to the din of chinuch. So the Rishonim have a big split, it's like 50-50, what the answer to the question is. So some answered that the din of chinuch only applies to parents. And here the Gemara says the katan is eating the nevelus, katan echel nevelus, ain't bezdim mitzuvan lafrishit. Bezdim means strangers. The outsiders are not mechuyev to tell the kid anything. They have to tell the kid that next year you're going to be bar mitzvah. So after you're bar mitzvah, you're not allowed to eat non-kosher food. But before his bar mitzvah, he's allowed to eat non-kosher. So that's one answer that the Rishonim give. The parents have to be mechanech the children on everything, on all the 630 mitzvahs that come their way. But acherim, others don't have the obligation of chinuch. And other Rishonim give a different answer, and the both answers are quoted in Shulchan Aruch. We're not sure what the correct answer is. The other Rishonim give a different answer. It's not true. The din of chinuch, to train the children before bar mitzvah, is not restricted only to the parents. It applies to others as well. If I see a child who's eating outside of the sukkah, even though it's not my child, I have to tell him, you're supposed to go eat in the sukkah. I don't have to go give him pesh, but it's my obligation to go over and tell a child to pester him and tell him, you're supposed to eat in the sukkah. You're not allowed to eat chutz mesukkah. But the mitzvah of chinuch only applies to mitzvahs and doesn't apply to averus. You're not talking about a mitzvah, you're talking about an avera. So if the child is before bar mitzvah, he's not a bar chiyuva. So if there's no avera, there's no avera. But a child before bar mitzvah is not mukhiyev to perform mitzvah sesa either, but if he will perform a mitzvah, it's like an eina mitzvah v'yoseh. There is a concept of eina mitzvah v'yoseh when Let's say a woman is medaktik to listen to Tkiya Shofar. So the women know they're not mechuyev to listen to Tkiya Shofar. It's a mitzvah sasesha as man grama, but the Gemara says, if one who's not mechuyev to perform a mitzvah volunteers that mitzvah, so you have reward, you have a kima mitzvah, there's reward, like an enem mitzvah v'yoysa. But let's say something is not, I'm permitted to eat chazer for some reason or another. I'm permitted to eat chazer. So what am I going to volunteer not to eat chazer? What, there is no kima mitzvah. In a mitzvah, sasei, there's a concept of enem mitzvah v'yoysa, you volunteer a kima mitzvah, even though you're not mechuyev. But in an avera, it doesn't make sense to volunteer. I'm not a kohen, so I'm going to volunteer not to go to the cemetery. If you're not a kohen, there's nothing to volunteer. There's no mitzvah sasei over here that it should make sense to volunteer. So the fact that fasting on Yom Kippur would only have been an avera, it's an avera to eat on Yom Kippur, then according to many Rishonim, there wouldn't have been a din achinach and ketanim. So the fact that fasting on Yom Kippur is not only an avera to eat, but it's a mitzvah saseh to fast. V'nisim is a kima mitzvah saseh. So according to many Rishonim, that's the reason why there's a din of chinuch for the children. There's only, according to these Rishonim, there's only a mitzvah of chinuch on ketanim in the area of mitzvah saseh. So that's why it's important to establish that fasting on Yom Kippur is a mitzvah saseh. V'nisim is nafshe seich. And also there's an avera for one who eats on Yom Kippur. The Gemara has the famous discussion, what's the din if a person just nibbles a tiny bit? He doesn't need a full shear. What exactly is the shear? So the Gemara says that the shear, in order to be punished for eating food on Yom Kippur, for drinking beverages on Yom Kippur, so the shear is different from eating non-kosher food. Because it's not really a din of machovas asuras. The food is kosher, we're just talking about a din of inui. Yisuvidaita, the Gemara calls it. It's a different concept. So the Gemara says, as far as drinking is concerned, so if you're going to drink non-kosher beverages all year long, whenever, non-kosher things, the shear is revius. Revius is the volume of an egg and a half. On Yom Kippur, the shear of drinking is less than revius. It's maloy lugma. Maloy lugma, by an ordinary bainani, average size mouth is a rav revius. It's smaller. The shear for fasting, as far as drinking is concerned, the shear is smaller than it is by treifas. As far as eating food is concerned, the shear is bigger. That usually in Kol HaTarakula, the shear for eating non-kosher food is kezayis, the volume of an olive. That's two opinions that are quoted in Shulchan Aruch, either the volume of a half an egg or the volume of a third of an egg, shlish beitza, chatzi beitza, means an average size egg. The eggs that we see are rolatan, the large eggs. We usually don't see average size eggs they make mayonnaise from. And the eggs that we see are either large or jumbo. We never see average beitza beinonis. So the kezayis is either shlish beitza or hatzi beitza, two opinions in Shulchan Aruch, either the volume of half an egg or a third of an egg, of an egg that's slightly smaller than the regular eggs that we see all the time. So with respect to eating food on Yom Kippur, the shear is more lechumra, because there'll be a little bit of yisuvi daita if you eat even koseves agasa, which is smaller than a I said it backwards. As far as drinking is concerned, the shear is smaller than revius. It's a revius. As far as eating is concerned, the shear is larger. The shear is usually kazayis, and here the shear is something like a kabetza, approximately a betza. Right. So the Gemara has a discussion. It happens to be in Maseches Yuma. They could have had the discussion anywhere else, but they have the discussion on the first daf and the last parak of Maseches Yuma. What's the nature of the prohibition if a person just takes a tiny sip of water less than the shear? A person nibbles a tiny bit of food less than the shear, less than koseves agasa, he drinks less than a maloy lugmav. Is that, you're not allowed to, but does that constitute a biblical prohibition or a rabbinical prohibition? So it'll make a difference. If you're dealing with a nisa min ha-Torah, then the only time you'll permit it is if you have a situation of pikuach nefesh, a suffik or a sveik sveik of pikuach nefesh. But if you're dealing with a nisa derabanan, then it'll be room, then there may be room to be more lenient. Even if it's, he may not have to be dafka chayla she'esh b'sakana, maybe even a chayla she'em b'sakana, we allow a lot of times to violate Yisurim derabanan. So this is a dispute between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. And whenever there's an argument between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, so the Gemara says we always follow Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan, with only three exceptions to the rule, this is not one of the three. The Gemara Yevamis has in HaChayla, the Gemara has the three exceptions to the rule. So we pass on like Rabbi Yochanan that even eating a chatzi shir, less than the shir for eating or less than the shir for drinking, constitutes an isa deraisa, a biblical prohibition. And in order to be mata that iser, you have to have the same situation, same emergency situation of a suffix sakana or a svek svek of sakana. Anything less than that, there's no room to be mekel. It's interesting, the Chasam Sofer points out, and others after him point out also, it's interesting, why did the Gemara shtel avek, why does the Gemara quote this argument over here in Yuma? They could have quoted it in the middle of Pesachim when they're talking about eating chametz. There's a whole section in the Gemara Pesachim about eating all basa b'chalav and klai hakerim and orla, all the non-kosher foods. A discussion in Kiddush and also Menes Mekadosh and Nisha with Isuri Hano. So the Gemara there has also a discussion about Macholos Hasuris and Isuri Hano. Why didn't the Gemara have the discussion somewhere else? Why is it in the Bavli, in the Talmud Bavli? It's over here in the Talmud Yerushalmi to have the discussion regarding a non-koyin eating truma. A non-koyin is not permitted to eat truma, for what if he eats a less than a kazayis of truma? Does that constitute a nisa deraisa or nisa derabbana? But the Bavli doesn't have it by truma. The Bavli has the machlokes by Yom Kippur. So the Chasam Sofer points out something very sharp, that one might have argued the point and said that maybe Rabbi Yochanan's opinion makes sense by eating chaza, by eating chametz bet pesach, by eating basa b'chala, if you're eating non-kosher food, so the food is non-kosher, so even less than a shir, there's also an isim in HaTorah. But fasting on Yom Kippur is based on the pasuk v'inisim. Do you sense that it broke your hunger or not? So if the rabbis established that the shear for eating food is kosevis agas, approximately the size of an egg, or the shear for drinking is a rov revius. So if they establish that less than that, there's no yisuvidaita, so perhaps it doesn't even make sense to say that it's an isa chatzi shear osman atar. Maybe by Yom Kippur, that should be the exception to the rule, that Rabbi Yochanan should agree to Reish Lakish, that there shouldn't be an isa min atar, should only be an isa de rabbanan. So the Chasam Sofer in his Chidushim HaMaseches Yuma points out, no, the Gemara quoted the dispute here in Yuma that you should realize that we accept Rabbi Yochanan's opinion even on Yom Kippur. Even on Yom Kippur, we are not dealing with non-kosher food. You're dealing with Yisuvi Daita, with Inui, and maybe it doesn't even make sense to say that a Chatzi Shir should constitute an Issa Min HaTorah. Even here, we do accept that opinion. Even by Yom Kippur, we paskin that it's only permissible to eat a Chatzi Shir if you have a situation of a Chodesh Yesh B'Sakonah. So that's... There is a Sefer HaChinuch. Sefer HaChinuch is a marvelous Sefer. He lists off what, in his opinion, are the 613 mitzvahs. This morning we read Parshas Vayelach. We read about the last two of the 613 mitzvahs. The one mitzvah for the whole tzibur of Hakel, that every sukkah is following Shemitah year. That's this coming sukkah. If there would have been Shemitah Men HaTorah, we would have had a mitzvah of Hakel Men HaTorah. We didn't have Shemitah Men HaTorah, so there isn't. The most he can do is a Zecha LaHakel. We don't have any real Hakel today. So that's the mitzvah on the whole tzibur to gather together on Chol HaMoed Sukkos to read from the Sefer Torah and the Azorah. And then you have the last mitzvah, Zechavis HaYachad. Each and every individual Jewish man is obligated to either write a Sefer Torah or to have commission a Sefer to write a Sefer Torah for him, or perhaps even to purchase a Sefer Torah. That's a discussion whether he fulfills the mitzvah by buying a Sefer Torah. So these are the last two. These are the last two of the mitzvahs in the Torah. So the Sefer HaChinuch is a sefer which collects all of the 613 mitzvahs, and he gives you some of the details of the mitzvahs, and then he gives you at the end of every mitzvah, he gives you the reasons he suggests tamim for the various mitzvahs. It's a good sefer that you really use it in all the high schools to introduce the children to have a general perspective of Kol HaTorah Kula, to have a picture of everything. And then there's another sefer that's called Minchas Chinuch, which is not really, you can't really call it a commentary on the Sefer HaChinuch. He has essays, he writes essays on each one of the 630 mitzvahs. Once in a long while, he'll write a comment on what the Sefer HaChinuch has to say. But usually he doesn't really address what the Sefer HaChinuch is talking about. He usually just talks about the topic. Sefer HaChinuch talks about the mitzvah of Pirei V'Rivia, so he writes a long essay. Sefer HaChinuch talks about the mitzvah of Milo, talks about the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, Gidon Nasha, so he'll write a whole essay about it. So here on this mitzvah of fasting on Yom Kippur, the Sefer HaChinuch writes a very strange line, that in order to permit someone to eat a regular meal on Yom Kippur, he has to really be a chayla sheyesh b'sakana, only if his life is threatened. But in order to eat pachas mikashir, even if he's not a chayla mesukan, he's also allowed to eat it. So the Minchas Chinuch, here he writes a comment on what the Sefer HaChinuch, he says he doesn't know what in the world he's talking about, it doesn't make any sense, it just can't be. even eating less than a kashir. We follow the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan. We accept the view of Rabbi Yochanan. The chatzi shir is a biblical prohibition, and anything that's forbidden in the Torah, the only time you'll have a hetzer to violate it is if you have a situation of a sakana, suffix sakana, fake sake of a sakana. How can he say that a chodesh shem sakana is permitted to eat pachas the kashir? There is no such thing. So Rav Elbel Soloveitchik has in his Sefer on the Rambam a whole essay on this comment of the Sefer Achinuch. So the story goes as follows. In the Valojin Yeshiva was founded in 1801 and it lasted for 90 years and then it was closed by the Russian government in 1891. It lasted 90 years. Then it was closed for a while, then they opened it up again under new auspices. Okay. So the last 39 years of the Valojin Yeshiva, the 39 of the 90 years, the head of the yeshiva was the Netziv. So the Netziv married the granddaughter of Rav Chaim Valojin, the founder of the yeshiva. So the Netziv, he came to the yeshiva before his bar mitzvah. He was a little boy when he came to learn the Valojin yeshiva. So he writes, when he was younger, he knew the great goyin Rav David Tebel. Rav David Tebel was a rabbi in Minsk. He was a student of Rav Chaim Valojin and one of the first. He's the author of the Sefer Nachlas David. And all the yeshivas, they use the Nachlas David on Baba Kama and Baba Metzia. So he says he remembers hearing from him as a child. He writes this. The Netziv wrote his commentary on the Shiltas when he was 17 years old. So the Nachlas David had already passed away at that time. He writes, he heard years before from the Nachlas David, who was a student in the early years, in the beginning of the Valojin Yeshiva, he heard the Rav Chaim Valojin used to paskin against the Mogen Avraham as far as the following din, that if a person, let's say there's a person 95 years old, and the doctor says he better not fast on Yom Kippur because he may lead to a sakana. So would you declare the 95-year-old person as a cholish yesh b'sakana? He's a healthy person. He comes to shul every day. He daves, puts on tefillin. He's retired. Sometimes they're not yet retired. Sometimes still going to work every day. It's not a cholish yesh b'sakana. It'll be a sakana for him if he's going to fast. This will put his life into danger. But right now it's not a cholish yesh b'sakana. But the doctor says if he's going to fast, it may cause a sakana. So then we tell him he has to eat to the extent that it's necessary to take care of the sakana. He shouldn't sit and eat a whole meal. He should only eat the bare minimum that's necessary. And if possible, the Gemara says, whenever you have a person has to violate, let's say a person's in a concentration camp, and they barely gave them enough food to survive, and the food was treif. Under the Russians also like that in Siberia. The little food that they got wasn't kosher. A lot of times they had mamish macholas asuras, that treif for soup and treif for food and so on. So they had no choice, so you have to eat it in order to save your life. But if it's possible, the Gemara says, Machil Mosa Hakala Kal Tchila. Let's say if you have, the Gemara in Yuma talks about, the Gemara doesn't imagine concentration camps. Who could have imagined such a wild image? The Gemara talks about a Chayla who's Bisakana. He has to eat some food in order to save his life. He can either eat Chazer or he can eat Chaylev. So Chaylev is an Isakaris, and Chazer is only an Isalav. So if you'll save your life by either eating A or B, it's the same. So violate the lesser Avera. Why violate the more serious Avera? So based on that passage in the Gemara, that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, Achila Mosa Hakala Kal Tchila. If you have to save your life by violating some Avera, so violate the lesser Avera rather than violate the more serious Avera. So we know that if a person eats a full kishir, a full amount, a full kosevis, hagasa, of food, a person drinks a full maloy lugmav on Yom Kippur, so that carries with it a punishment of kares. If he would do it b'mezid, without a heta. If a person eats less than a shir, so chatzi shir we paskin as asam and atar, but there's no punishment of kares. So if the person, you can eat the same amount of food, but instead of eating the whole amount of food in one shot, which would be a more serious aver, an aver sheyesh b'kares, you wouldn't have a heta. So if you eat a little bit now, and you wait a few minutes, you eat a little bit later, then you wait a few more minutes, you eat a little bit later, that's called eating pachas mikisha. You eat less than a shia now, then you pause a significant amount of time, then you eat a little bit later. So here you've saved your life, your stomach will be full, you won't be in any sakana, but you have saved your life without violating the more serious avera of eating the kishir. You've only violated the avera of eating chatzi shir, which Rish Lakish thinks is only prohibited in the Rabbanan, and we pass like Rabbi Yechanan, that too is an isim and atur. But since the Gemara says if you have to save your life, you should try to violate the lesser avera, if you have a choice of violating a more serious aver or a lesser aver, so violate the lesser aver, machilu masa akal akal tchila. So to eat pachas mikashir is better than to violate the aver by eating in a full kashir. So Rabbi Chaim Balozhin had paskin like this. What it says in Shulchan Aruch, that if the person, let's say, an older person, 95 years old, the doctor says he has to eat on Yom Kippur. Okay? I live in Washington Heights. So I remember years ago when I first got married, I moved into the neighborhood. So Rabbi Breuer, who passed away at the age of 98, used to make house calls during Aseres Meitshuva. There are a lot of Balabatim who are they live to a ripe old age there. So he used to go visit them in Aseres Meitshuva, and he used to tell them that just like it's a mitzvah for the healthy people to fast on Yom Kippur, so for you, it's a mitzvah for you that you have to eat on Yom Kippur. If he would call him up on the telephone, he was afraid he wouldn't listen. So he made a point of visiting the people in their home to insist that they have to, because people have been fasting for the last 90 years, so they don't want to change their practice now. So he had to insist, no, the din is that when it's a suffix hakana, you're not allowed to be frum. You have to eat. If necessary, you have to eat. There's a sefer Issa V'Heter that's quoted in every page in Yoreh Day. Issa V'Heter is written by the Rabbeinu Yoina, not the famous Rabbeinu Yoina that we know, Rabbeinu Yoina Hasfardi from Gerundi, the Mechutna of the Ramban. This Rabbeinu Yoina Ashkenazi, a different Rabbeinu Yoina, from the Baalei HaTosfos. So he quotes their story. He has one section in Issa V'Heter about Pikuach Nefesh, so the dinim of Safek Sakon. So he quotes there was one Baalei HaTosfos, he identifies him by name. It's not the Rabbeinu Tam, it's not the Ri, not from the famous Baalei HaTosfos, who was deathly sick on right before Yom Kippur, and the doctors told him that if he'll eat on Yom Kippur, there's a chance that he may survive. It's a good chance he probably will not survive, even if he eats on Yom Kippur, but there's a slim chance that if he eats on Yom Kippur, he may survive. So he decided that ain't safik mitzvah midei vaday, he's not gonna eat on Yom Kippur, and he died. And he died on Yom Kippur because of his frumishtik. So all the Baalei HaTosfos were angry at him. He had no right to fast on Yom Kippur. So Taka, what was he, crazy? What was he insane? The answer was no, that's a special case. He was deathly sick, and the doctor said he probably will die. There's a slim chance that if he'll eat, he may survive. So he held that that's not called the suffix pikuach nefesh, that's derech Shabbos, because he's already in a situation of a cholam esukon, and the likelihood, 95% certain that he is going to die, slim chance he'll survive, that's not a heter. And we don't accept that cheshbon either. That cheshbon is not correct. That's called a suffix of Sakanas Nefashis, so the din requires that you have to eat on Yom Kippur. So the Rav Elbala Soloveitchik explains as follows. If you have an older person who's not sick, he's a healthy person, he's functioning, but the doctors say if he'll fast on Yom Kippur, then he may become sick and he may die. He may put his life in danger. So then, since he's not a Cholam Mesukan, so we tell him, you're only allowed to eat to the extent that it's necessary to save your life. So don't eat a whole full meal. Eat only what's necessary. And if you can eat pachas mikashik, eat a tiny little, have a little nibble now, have a little sip of water now, and then wait a few minutes. We'll discuss soon how many minutes you have to wait. Wait a few minutes and have another nibble of food. By the end of the day, he will have eaten enough that he needs in order to survive, but he will have only violated the violation of chatzi shir. He will not have violated the full shir. So that's the din. Machilamoso, hakala kalchila. Rather than violate the full aveira of the full shir, if you can save your life by violating less, so violate the aveira of chatzi shir. But the Netziv said, what if the person already is a chodesh yesh b'sakana? He is deathly sick. The woman just had a baby. She's a chodesh, years ago, a woman who just had a baby was considered a chodesh yesh b'sakana. Maybe today they take prenatal pills and postnatal pills, and everything is that the women who have babies are usually healthier than their husbands because they're taking so many vitamin pills and so on. So it could be that today it's not the same as it used to be, but in the days of the Gemara, in the days of the Shulchan Aruch, a woman who just had a baby within the last 3 days was considered a chodesh yesh b'sakana. Oh, that's it, a person just had surgery, a knee surgery. He's literally, he is sick, deathly sick, a chodesh yesh b'sakana. So Cholish Yesh B'Sakana says in Shulchan Aruch, you're permitted to do on Shabbos Kol Tzarachav. You're allowed to take care of all of his needs. So what this expression comes from the Magen Mishnah. That's one of the commentaries on the side of the Rambam. And he explains what he means. If a person is a Cholish Yesh B'Sakana, he already is deathly sick, and we're treating him to pull him out of that Sakana, to cure him, then not only are you permitted to be Mechal Shabbos for those aspects that he needs to save his life, you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos just to make him more comfortable. Even though the comfort clearly is not going to save his life, not going to make or break his chance of survival, since he's a chelus sheish b'sakana, so all the laws don't apply. So the
Nitziv,
yeah. The Gemara has In Masechet Shabbos, the Gemara has like that.
If an older man is not in Sakana, but yet he has a heter to eat from time to time during the day enough to survive, then why is he in violation of Chatzis Shir? Why doesn't the heter simply trump everything?
Right, he's not in violation of Chatzis Shir.
Mutter
is mutter. Okay. Mutter is mutter. But rather than permit him to violate the larger Aveira, we say you can survive by violating the smaller Aveira, eating less than the Shia. So eat a little bit now, wait a few minutes, eat a little bit later, and so on.
But in other words, there's no Aveira that applies.
No Aveira whatsoever. No, perfect. You can get an Ali also on Yom Kippur. Not a problem. He davens regular. He's not in violation of anything. It's Heter Goma. But if he can save his life by violating a smaller Aveira, so why permit him to violate the more serious Aveira? But if the person is not Stam, an older person that we're afraid he may get sick, he already is sick, he's deathly sick, and we're trying to cure him, to get him out of the situation of being a chayla. So then the Netziv has this tradition from the Nachlas David, who heard it from Rav Chaim Valozhin, that was the psak in Valozhin. He was the Rav of Valozhin, not just he was the one who founded the yeshiva, he was the Rav of Valozhin also. So that was the psak in the yeshiva, that by chayla sheish besakone, if it would be Shabbos, you would be mechal Shabbos to take care of all of his needs, just to make him more comfortable. So the same on Yom Kippur, you give him a regular meal, you don't tell him that he should eat pachas mikishir.
And the Mogen Avraham said pachas. They were arguing the Mogen Avraham who said
pachas mikishir, right. Rav Soloveitchik is always fond of telling over this story, and he has it in his long essay about Isha Halacha. So he says that when his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, took his first rabbinical position, so his father, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, wished him Hatzlocha, and he shook his hand, and he made him take a tkiyas kaf, he made him promise to him, swear to him that in every community on Yom Kippur there are people who have to eat. I was a rabbi in a tiny little community in Paramus for a few years. A very tiny community. It was just barely a minyan. They had people there who had to eat on Yom Kippur. That was one of the first things I had a paskin about. There was one woman who was taka deathly sick. She died a few years later taka. She had to eat on Yom Kippur, so we had to determine how much she should eat on Yom Kippur. So Rab Chaim Soloveitchik, when he wished his son farewell, Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik, and he took this Rabbanus, so he made him promise to him that if he would have a situation of a chodesh sheish v'sakana on Yom Kippur, he would permit him to eat a regular meal. He wouldn't insist that they should eat pachas mikashir. That's not the common practice. The common practice is all the Rabbanim, they tell even the sick patients in the hospital who mamish choyle mesukin, they tell everybody to try to eat pachas mikashir. So that's what they had tainus against Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. Why is he so makel? It wasn't Rav Chaim Soloveitchik is not the one who came up. This is a tradition from Rav Chaim Valozhin before Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was born. Rav Chaim Valozhin gave this psak, and the Netziv, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik married the granddaughter of the Netziv. Rav Chaim was around when they closed Valozhin. The end. But this is a psak from the first year, from 1801, Rav Chaim Valozhin, before he founded the yeshiva. This was the psak in Valozhin, that they follow Rav Chaim Valozhin, and they don't follow this Mogen Avraham, that by Chol Shesh B'sakana, you give him a regular meal. So they had tainus against, they had tarumus against Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. Why is he so lenient in Hilchos Yom Kippur, the meeting is like the Mogen Avraham? So Rav Velvela Soloveitchik writes in his sefer that my father always used to answer, I'm not a mekel, I'm a machmer and pikuach nefesh. I'm a machmer and Hilchos pikuach nefesh. That's what it says in Hilchos Shabbos. That you have to take care of the chodesh sheish b'sakana called sarachov. And the Mishnah Brura has a long essay there in Hilchos Shabbos where he disagrees with this Magid Mishnah. The Magid Mishnah is the one who writes like that. That a chodesh sheish b'sakana, you're allowed to be mechal Shabbos not only to save his life, even to make life more comfortable. Whatever you would do on a weekday for him, that's what you have to do on Shabbos. Mamish called sarachov. And the Mishnah Brura has a long attack against that Magid Mishnah. And he thinks we shouldn't follow his position. So Rav Velvela Soloveitchik in his Sefer on the Rambam goes line by line. He answers every kasha of the Mishnah Berurah and explains that all the cases that the Mishnah Berurah quoted, we're not talking about a person who's already a chayla. We're talking about a person who's healthy, whom if we won't take care of him, he will become a chayla. He will enter into a situation of sakana, but he's not yet a chayla mesukan. But once you are a chayla mesukan, the Shulchan Aruch quotes this from the Magen Mishnah, that we allow the person to eat called sarachov. Regarding taking medications on Yom Kippur, so there is a general din, one is not permitted to take a medication on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Yom Tov Sheni, we permit medication, taking pills or the like. Yom Tov Sheni, we allow, with the exception of the second day Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara says in the end of Masechus Beitza that because the second day Rosh Hashanah is what the Gemara calls Kedusha Achas, we call it Yom HaRichter, that's from Rashi. But the Gemara's terminology, it's called a Kedusha Achas. It has the same dinim as the first day, Rosh Hashanah. does not 100% the same deed. If there's someone dies on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, you do bury him. You do kfuris ameis on yantab sheni shel Rosh Hashanah. But leaving out kfuris ameis, the Gemara says all the other dinim are the same. First day of Rosh Hashanah, second day of Rosh Hashanah is the same. So the second day of Rosh Hashanah, there's no heter to take refuas, unless there would have been a heter on Shabbos and yantab. And the second day of any other yantab, so we permit the refuas. So normally there's a prohibition, you're not allowed to take pills on Shabbos and yantab, unless a person is taka chayla she'ein bo sakan. Chayla she'ein bo sakan means a person has such a serious condition that he's unable to function normally. Let's say the person has such a splitting headache, he has to lie down in bed, he can't function normally. Or he has a flu, so he has to rest in bed. Or even if he's not resting in bed, he's slowed down, he can't breathe, he can't hear, he can't think, he just can't function. Some people have a sinus condition, they just can't function. So if the person has slight aches and pains, and he's able to hop around, he's able to run around and function normally, and he has the aches and pains, so that's exactly what the din is, that such a person is not supposed to take medication. But if the person doesn't have some slight aches and pains, he's a chel sheim b'sakan, means that the condition that he has prevents him from functioning normally. Let's say if you have a little child is hungry, a three-year-old child is hungry, and the child starts when the child, a little baby wants his bottle. The baby's not sick, but the baby wants his bottle, he's going to start to scream, he's going to go crazy. Or the child is going to get a temper tantrum in the middle of the street, he's crossing the street, they always get in the middle. And then the light changes. So the child is not a chayla, but the Shulchan Aruch considers such a child a chayla sheim b'sakana. Why? It means the child has a condition, babyhood, whatever you call it. Child has a condition that prevents him from functioning normally. Normally the child plays with his toys or fights with the other children, or whatever a normal child does. And now because the child is hungry, or because whatever it happens to be, so he starts screaming his head off. It doesn't correspond to reality, but still, the baby has a condition that prevents him from functioning normally. So that's considered a chodesh eim b'sakana. So if you have a chodesh eim b'sakana, we have a lot of heterim. Amir with a nochri is mutter, you can ask a goy to take the child across the street or to carry him in a carmelis. If it's only a carmelis and the child starts walking in the middle of the street, so that's crossing a big thoroughfare. So that's considered a chol d'shem b'sakana, and you're permitted to carry a child in a carmelis in such a situation. So to take refuah on Yom Kippur is an issue, the same issue as on Shabbos and Yom Tov. We only permit taking pills if the person is a chol d'shem b'sakana. So the shah is, well, what if he's a chol d'shem b'sakana? But in order to swallow this big gigantic pill, he has to have something to drink it down with. So drinking down the little bit of water is a chatzi shir. So that's awesome in our Torah. So the only heter to drink a chatzi shir is if you have a situation of a sofik sakana, which you don't have over here. So there wouldn't be any heter. So the Rabbanim always used to say, based on the Mishnah Maseches Yuma, if you have food that's so spoiled that it's not roi l'achilo, or if you have drinks that are so awful tasting that no one would want to drink it, nipsal me'achilo, so there's no biblical prohibition in eating or drinking these foods. With the Rabbanon, you're not allowed to eat it, because if I sit and I eat it and I drink it, so I demonstrate that from my perspective, subjectively speaking, achshavei, as far as I'm concerned, it is roi l'achilo. But that's only with the Rabbanon itself. But when I turn, the Mishnah says that it's mutar. So this idea of achshavei, that if I sit and I eat the food that's nifsal me'achilo, I drink the beverages that are not roi l'achilo, let's say mouthwash, Listerine, Ascope, or something like that. When they have these bottles of soda at the wedding, so sometimes they taste awful. But, some of them are not all, they don't all taste like Pepsi Cola, Coca Cola. Some of them are not so good. But we drink it. It's a roi l'achilo. But let's say if you put mouthwash on the table and you just put it in a pitcher, the first one who's going to drink it is going to tell everybody, don't drink it. This stuff is not roi l'achilo. No one's going to think that's a new flavor of soda. So if you have, let's say if you have some kind of mouthwash that's literally not roi l'achilo, so strictly speaking, men atorah, there's no prohibition. It's only forbidden by the Rabbanim, because if I sit and I drink it, I sit and I eat it, so I demonstrate that as far as I'm concerned, it is roi l'achilo, but haray that I'm drinking it. But if I'm only drinking in order to swallow down a pill, so you can't say in such a case, achshavei. So let's say in case a person has to take some medication on Yom Kippur, and you have a heter to take the medication because he's a chol sheim b'sakana. If he's not a chol sheim b'sakana, he's not allowed to take the medication on Shabbos Yom Tov either. But if he is a chol sheim b'sakana, so you have a heter to take the medication on Yom Kippur, so then if need be, a person has to swallow it down, so you should swallow it down with some mouthwash or something else that's spoiled, that's not roi l'achilo.
aren't the definition of cholish sheyesh bo sakana. There are many medical conditions where the person is seemingly healthy, let's say a cardiac arrhythmia. He's healthy because he takes his medicine. If he didn't take his medicine, he's a cholish sheyesh bo sakana by all medical criteria. So on Yom Kippur, now that he's taking his medicine, do we consider a cholish sheyesh bo sakana and therefore he takes his medicine, and, or is he a cholish sheyesh bo sakana because now that he's on the medicine, he's basically functioning healthy?
No, if we're concerned, the whole reason why he's taking this medication because we're afraid that he has a condition already that's life-threatening. And we're sustaining his life because of this medication.
So does he have to use Listerine or use water, puffs, mikashir?
If the Listerine will do the trick, let him have the Listerine. But, you have to ascertain from the doctors whether he can take the Listerine. That may cause a sakana. Usually he does not. He doesn't drink a whole cup of Listerine. Just to take a few drops. The Mishnah says that when you determine whether a person ate a full shear or less than a shear, so the shear has to be eaten within a certain close amount of time. So the Mishnah talks about eating food on Yom Kippur. So if you eat kosebes agasi, the volume approximately of an egg, a normal size egg, within the amount of time that would have taken one to eat, kedei achilas pras. What does kedei achilas pras mean? The amount of time that it would take to eat either three beitzim. Let's say the shear for eating food is the volume of an egg. So if you eat a little bit now and pause a little bit, eat a little bit later, if you could have eaten up either three or four eggs in that amount of time, that's called kedei achilas pras. So how long is that? How long is that amount of time? So the Chasam Sofer was a big baki. So the Chasam Sofer has a whole pshetel, a whole shtikel Torah, based on a Gemara in Bamei Madlikin, and he claims that it's 9 minutes. He claims that the shear is 9 minutes. And the Mishnah Brura quotes this Chasam Sofer. How did the Mishnah Brura know which poskim to quote halacha l'maaseh? So it's not interesting, the history. The Mishnah Brura tells you in the introduction what it is. People in yeshivas don't believe it because they never read introduction. No, who reads introduction to books? They read the Sefer itself. So the Mishnah Brura always quotes the commentaries on the Shulchan. Mishnah Brura is a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. So he'll always quote all the commentaries on the page. He'll quote the Taz and the Magen Avraham and the Behetiv and the Shari Tshuva and the Machtza Shekel and the Prima Gadim and the Chemin Moshe, whoever wrote a Chibra on the Sefer. What about the Chasam Sofer wrote Shadus HaTshuvas, Rabbi Kivega wrote Shadus HaTshuvas, or Agurabo HaLecho, or some exotic, other exotic Svarim. So he'll only quote those poskim who are not on the Daf, who are quoted in the Sefer Pischei Tshuva. There was a Dayan in Vilna who wrote a tiny little Sefer, which is used to be available for a dollar, probably cost $10 now, a skinny little Sefer, something like 70 pages, small size. And this is a likut of psokim on Shulchan Aruch. So he writes in the introduction to the Mishnah Brura, he will only quote those achronim who are not on the daf, who are quoted by the Pischei Tshuva. So Moshe Feinstein writes in one place, he's surprised on the Mishnah Brura, why did he only quote the Prima Gadim? Why didn't he quote the famous Chasam Sofer? The answer is because it's not his fault. The Pischei Tshuva didn't quote the Chasam Sofer, so that's why he didn't quote it. He only quotes the achronim on the daf, or those poskim who are quoted those poskim quoted in the Sefer Pischei Tshuva. So here also. The Pischei Tshuva quotes this Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer has this fantastic pilpul. The Gemara is not at all talking about eating on Yom Kippur. The Gemara is not talking at all about eating tray for food. A totally different topic. The Gemara is talking about how long does it take to climb up to the top of Har HaKarmel. So the Chasam Sofer has a whole fantastic shtikel Torah, and he shows, based on that Gemara, that the Shia Kedei Achilas Pras is 9 minutes. All of the later poskim disagree. The overwhelming majority of the poskim say that it's much less than 9 minutes. You don't have to wait 9 minutes between eating the first bit of food and eating the next bit of food. Some poskim say it's 3 minutes, 4 minutes, but way less than 9 minutes. Some poskim say it's 11 and a half minutes. That's an exaggeration on top of an exaggeration. That's a chumrah on top of chumrah. But strictly speaking, it's much less than 9 minutes. So because the Mishnah Brura quoted the Chasam Sofer, so that's what most of the rabbanim say. They tell the balabatim, those who have to eat on Yom Kippur, they should eat less than a shear and wait. So they tell them, wait 9 minutes and then eat a little bit later. So the Dinan, the Minchas Chinuch points out, on the first mitzvah, Minchas Chinuch is this Sefer that goes according to the Sefer Achino. So the first mitzvah in the Torah where the Torah says you're not allowed to eat some non-kosher food is gid anoshim. That's in Vayishlach, in Chumash Bereish. So in the mitzvah of gid anoshim, the first mitzvah is Rivya, the second mitzvah is bris milah, and the third mitzvah is gid anoshim. And then you get to Achodesh Azalachem, you get to Kiddush Achodesh, and you get all to the rest of the mitzvah. So mitzvah Gimel, Menachas Chinuch discusses, what does it mean, Kedei Achilas Pras? If I eat, let's say I'm eating bread on Yom Kippur. So if I eat the volume of an egg of bread, and even if I pause a little bit, but if I ate this volume of bread within the amount of time that I could have eaten three eggs, the amount of time I could have eaten three eggs of what? The volume of three eggs of what? So the Menachas Chinuch says, the shear depends on each and every individual Michael. If you're eating hard-boiled eggs, how long would it take to eat three hard-boiled eggs, three or four hard-boiled eggs? If you're eating Cheerios, how long would it take to eat the volume of three eggs of Cheerios? If you're eating fish, how long? Some foods are moister than others, and some foods take much longer than others to chew and to swallow. Others go down your throat very quickly, drinking water. So the shear is going to be 9 minutes for water. How long does it take to drink the volume of three eggs of water? Less than a minute. How can you say 9 minutes? So the Menachas Chinuch says he doesn't think that this is correct, that the Poskim established the shear. How long does it take? Kedei Achilas Pras, the amount of time that it takes to eat the volume of three eggs. Three eggs of what? He says each food has its own shear. Kedei Achilas Pras. The Gemara gives one shear kavua. The Gemara talks about the amount of time that it takes to eat Kedei Achilas Pras Pas Chitim of bread that's made from wheat flour, mesa beichel beliftan, and you're dipping your bread, not dry bread, you're dipping a bread in mayonnaise or in salad dressing, so it's going to be moister, so it'll go down the throat faster. So he says that's because the Gemara is talking about a person who's not eating any food at all. The Gemara has it then yet we have tzaras batim. If the Kohen has to declare that a certain building in Eretz Yisrael has an eget tzaras, so the Chumash says that whoever will enter the house, walk in for a second and walk out, the habol abayis will be tummy. If he enters the house and he stays there for a longer period of time, not only is he tummy, even the clothing that he's wearing are also tummy. The Gemara says if he walks into the house and he's carrying a suitcase with a lot of clothing and he's carrying clothing in his hands, so just like he becomes tummy immediately, so the clothing that he's carrying in his hands also becomes tummy immediately. But if he's wearing clothing, he's wearing shoes and socks, he's wearing rings on his fingers, so the clothing that he's wearing only becomes tummy if he stays in the house. Sure, kedei achilas pras. But he's not eating anything. So how long is kedei achilas pras? So the Gemara says he stays in the Bais HaManuga so long enough that he could have eaten the volume of three or four eggs worth of bread made from wheat, mesa v'echol pas chitim, mesa v'echol beliftan, dipping it into some salad dressing, that it goes down faster. But if you're talking about Menachas Chinuch, if you're talking about a person eating food, so each food has its own shiur kedei achilas pras. The Poskim even have a dispute of what about drinking hot coffee. The hot coffee, you have to pause till you drink your whole shear of coffee. But if it would have been room temperature coffee, you could have swallowed down the whole cup of coffee, one, two, three. So does the shear kedei achilas pras depend on hot coffee or the same coffee, room temperature? But no one said the shear for coffee should be dependent on bread or the shear bread should be dependent on coffee. Each food has its own shear achilas pras. So this is the hasog of the Menachas Chinuch. So if anyone has, whoever has such a condition that you have to eat on Yom Kippur, so you have to work out with your rabbi what food you're eating and how long you have to wait to determine that it should be not be mitztarf yachad. The Mishnah says that eating food and drinking beverages on Yom Kippur are not mitztarf from yachad because they have a different shear. The only time things are mitztarf from together is if shiurim shovim, if the din is the same and the shear is the same. But the shear for drinking is... when the shear for eating is Kosebus Agasa, so since the shurim are not identical, so if a person has less than a shear of eating food and less than a shear of drinking, he can have both simultaneously. He can eat right away and eat and drink right away. He doesn't have to wait after the eating, and that's considered less than a shear. Then if he waits a few minutes, wait 9 minutes or whatever, 5 minutes, 3 minutes, if you wait a couple of minutes, then you eat again, then you can have a little bit to eat and a little bit to drink if the person is has a situation where he has such a heter, because the Mishnah says that the eating and the drinking are not mitzvah from yachad.
It's definitely not more than 9 minutes.
That's for sure not. That's for sure not. There are those who say 11 minutes, but that's the whole Chasam Sofer is assumed to be a big chumah. The overwhelming majority of the poskim say it's way less than 9 minutes.
How far do you have to go to be choshesh for the Magen Avraham about pachas pachas mikashir? You need to eat a certain amount. So you can do it, you can stretch it out all day, but you can miss masa, but you can miss mincha because you're doing pachas pachas mikashir for hours.
Strictly speaking, you can take your food to shul. We had a student in yeshiva had a condition. Everybody knew that he had this condition, so he ate in the base medrash. He had his bottle. He had to take his drinking. He had to eat his food. So he ate in the middle of musaf, and no problem. There's another thing. If a person has a condition that requires of him that he should eat, then he's going to strain himself. He's going to go to shul. He's going to stand. Then that he may cause himself. He may require of himself that he has to eat more in order to have the koyach to strain himself to walk to shul. So that's not really right. He didn't really have a hetter to eat that extra amount. So he shouldn't strain himself. He should stay home. Rav Soloveitchik was asked, Shaila comes up, halacha l'maaseh, every so often. A chazan has a condition that he has to eat, a medical condition. He has to eat on Yom Kippur. Is he allowed to daven for an omid if he's eating? So Rav Soloveitchik said, strictly speaking, he can daven for an omid, but he says it's not right. Because he's going to have to strain himself, and that's it's going to require him that he should eat more on Yom Kippur. So he didn't really have a head to eat the extra amount. So let him not daven for an omid. He won't have to eat so much. He'll only need less in order to keep himself alive. So he thought the bottom line said, strictly speaking, he can daven for an omid, but that's going to require of him to eat more. So that's not right. He said you shouldn't daven for an omid.
And such people can get aliyahs. Such people can get aliyahs.
In the morning, for sure, they can get an aliyah. Mincha is a Shailan Rebbe Kivegas tshuva. If you had a chayla who's observing all the laws of Yom Kippur, and the law says that he has to eat on Yom Kippur. So that's a dion, Rebbe Kivegas quotes, that's a machlokes in the days of the Rishonim, where the Kriyas HaTorah by Mincha, on Yontif, we don't have Kriyas HaTorah by Mincha. We only have on Shabbos, and we have on the Tainas Sibur. That's a shaila. Why do we have Kriyas HaTorah on Yom Kippur to Mincha, in addition to the Kriyas HaTorah that we had in the morning? Is it because Yom Kippur is a Tainis Tzibur? So then whoever is not fasting on Yom Kippur, fine, he didn't violate any Avera. He had absolutely had the goma that he can eat. But bottom line, he's not fasting on Yom Kippur, so he really shouldn't get an Aliyah, like on Tisha B'Av or Asar B'Tavis. Whoever's not fasting shouldn't get an Aliyah. Should we assume, no, that the Kriyas HaTorah to Mincha on Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur is like Shabbos, it's not like Yom Kippur, it's like Shabbos, and that's why we have Kriyas HaTorah. If it's like Shabbos, he didn't violate anything, so he's entitled to get an aliyah. So that's usually assumed to be a machloikis and Shulchan Aruch. The shaila is, when the one who gets mafta yayna by mincha on Yom Kippur, so how does he end off all the brachas? On the Tainis Sibur, to mincha, the last bracha you say is Magen David. So you don't go any further. And if the Kriyas HaTorah to Mincha is not because of a Taina Sibur, if it's because it's Yom Kippur, and Yom Kippur is like Shabbos, then you should say the last bracha also, Allah Torah v'Allah HaVodah, well, Yom HaKippurim HaZeh, then you should conclude, Melech HaKohos Mekadosh Yisrael v'Yom HaKippurim. So that's the two opinions in Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber and the Ramah, whether you should say, when one finishes Mafti Yoyna, does he end off Magen David, or does he say the last bracha as well? There are two minhagim, Rav Soloveitchik pointed out. The two minhagim, when you're laying in different shuls, when you're laying Kriyas HaTorah to Mincha, does the Baal Kori laying with the special nusa, the special nigan for Yom Kippur, or does he lay regular Kriyas HaTorah? Or when he gets an aliyah, does he say Baruch Hashem Hamavayrach? Does he sing with the special Yom Naron digan nigan? Does he say Baruch Hashem Avarach like a regular Tainis Sibur? So he said all of these are interconnected. The shaila is whether the Kriyas HaTorah to Mincha is b'toras Tainis Sibur or is b'toras Yom Naron. So if it's Petoros Yom Narayim, so the minig is that you sing the special Yom Narayim Digan Digan, then the mafta should end off Allah Torah ve'Allah Levadava Yom HaKippurim HaZeh, the long brach. So that's Rabbi Kivega's deal. Rabbi Kivega raises that issue and he says that it should depend on this shaila.
If it's just like Shabbos, then you shouldn't have
Haftarah. In the days of the Gemara, they used to have Haftarah Shabbos to Mincha also. The Gemara says in Balmei Mahlikin, they didn't say a Haftarah from Novi, they said a Haftarah from Tehillim. Somewhere along the lines, that got lost. But in the days of the Gemara, the Mishnah says, Eim Haftirim Benovi. It says there's no Haftarah Benovi, Shabbos Yeftinim Temincha. The Gemara says they used to say Haftarah from Ksuvim. The Rabbi Tam says it's not a contradiction. The Haftarah was from Tehillim, it wasn't from Novi. So that's the deal, whether the Haftarah, whether the Kriyas HaTorah, whether the Haftarah that we have by Mincha and Yom Kippur is parallel to Shabbos, except that by us we read Mafti Yoinim because we want everybody to be Chayzeh B'tshuva or it's B'Torah.
You could have said the opposite, you could have said it's not like a Tanis Tzibor because it's Ve'at Zachar and Mafti Yonah and not Yeshua Shulim Matzah. Meaning that's how you know that's because when Yeshua said Yonah.
I think in the days of the Gemara, they also didn't say Dish Hashem Behimotzo. They had a different haftar. About Tshuva. About Tshuva on a time to see. About feeding little children, so the Gemara has it in, even a little baby who's Lohi Gil Achinuch. A baby is not even a year old. Doesn't understand anything about the kashrus. Not Higil Achinuch, but you're not allowed to feed a child non-kosher food. You have to buy kosher. It doesn't have to be glut kosher Lamahadrin. But you're not allowed to feed non-kosher things to a little baby. So that's a shaila. What if you have a little baby and you're feeding him on Yom Kippur? So whatever you give him is an aveira, even kosher food. Is he not allowed to? So, well, if you don't feed the baby, it could be a safek sakana. Who says? Let's say the parent of the child is a medical doctor. And, you know, not a safek sakana. The kid will scream his head off. But there won't be a safek sakana. It may be a safek sakana to the mother who has to take care. The kid is going to be screaming all day long. It won't be a suffix hakana to the baby. The baby will be very uncomfortable. So the Minchas Chinuch writes such an einfam that you're only allowed to feed the baby when there's a suffix hakana to the baby. But if you're positive that there's no suffix hakana to the baby, just the baby's going to be screaming because it's uncomfortable, you're not allowed to feed the baby. So it's interesting. And Minchas Chinuch lived.
Put it in his mouth versus him handling it himself.
Yeah, yeah. If the child is old enough, you tell the kid, if you want to eat, go home and make a tuna fish sandwich. So that's not a problem. But l'hachila bi'adai means to feed the child, to put it in his mouth, to insist that the child should eat. So the Minchas Chinuch writes that on a little baby that you have to feed, you're not allowed to feed the baby unless this is safek sakana. So Minchas Chinuch lived 100 years ago. Minchas Chinuch lived the end of the 1800s. It's interesting that Rabbi Natam, who was Rashi's grandson, he lived centuries ago, writes that there were those, it was before the movement of Hasidus began, but he writes there were a group of Hasidim who thought that they're acting with a degree of Midas Chassidus, who developed such a nainfal, such a notion like the Minchas Chinuch said, that you're not allowed to feed the babies unless you're concerned that there may be a suffix sakana. So Rabbi Natam writes in his Sefer Yosha that he considers that utterly ridiculous. And he says, based on the Gemara, that this prohibition, also l'achilo bi'adam, you're not allowed to feed a little infant, even though the child is lo higil achinuch, you're not allowed to feed the child non-kosher food. That's only if the child doesn't really need it. But if it's in the normal course of raising children, let's say a child has some kind of allergy to milk, and you have to give some kind of a substitute, and the substitute happens to be non-kosher, has chazeshmaltz in it, has some treif ingredient. So Rabbi Natam says there's no prohibition. If you're talking about a child who's lo higil achinuch, and you're just worried about the prohibition, osa l'achilu bi'adayim, so he quotes the Gemara says beferish in the last perek in Yuma, osa l'achilu bi'adayim doesn't apply. Whenever Heine Revise, whenever that's the normal way to raise children, such a child needs this kind of food. So then you don't have to discuss whether there's a suffix sakana. It doesn't have to be a suffix sakana. How does one determine whether any given food is an oichel or a mashke? So we usually assume that an oichel is a solid and a mashke is a liquid. So that's what quite a few poskim say, that that's not really the definition. They talk about raw eggs. The Maram Shik has a tshuva. Whether eating a raw egg is a liquidy thing, so he says a raw egg is not a beverage that people drink when they're thirsty. Raw egg is something that, whatever, chazanim eat when they want to get a good voice, or whatever it is. So raw egg is really considered a meichel, it's not considered a mashke. Or let's say soup. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Chayodam that soup is considered a noichel, even though it's very liquidy, even though it pours just like water. Let's say you have vegetable soup and you strained out all the vegetables and the whole thing is clear. But the vegetable soup is not something that you drink when you're thirsty. It's a food that the people eat when they're hungry. So even though the whole thing is liquidy, so the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Chayyotim that the shear is koseves agasa, the shear is not malay lugmav.
The soup is a food in concentration camp.
That soup is a food, it's not considered a mashke, right?
That's a give us instead of that, they give us food.
So. No, it's not correct. Soup is a food. That's how you order that soup is a
food.
Yeah.
It's like a carrot juice, it's very thick.
No, it's all wrong.
Even if it was full of water.
Carrot juice that people drink as a beverage.
Yeah, it's like, and it's very thick, it's dense.
Dense is probably like a soup then. It would probably be an oichel, probably would not be a mashke. So you have to determine each case whether the food that a person has to eat is the, does it have the status of an oichel, does it have the status of a mashkeh.
I remember you giving a shiur in Staten Island 25 years ago about schnapps
yes.
in the morning.
Yes.
And you said schnapps is an oichel, therefore the shiur is kizai, is enough to read. Then you hear on Shabbos morning, you can make kiddush on schnapps.
Right. The Kosher Glover writes like that. He says, why did the chassidim make kiddush on schnapps on such a little schnapps glass? It doesn't have a revius. The revius is the volume of an egg and a half. So he says, because schnapps is an oichel. Schnapps is not a beverage that even in Russia, where they drink a lot of vodka, but they don't drink it. They don't drink vodka like a beverage. They drink it like a soup. They drink it to be a happy mood, whatever, to be relaxed. So that's what the Kosher Glover said. That's Rab Chaim Volozhiner says the same. Rab Chaim Volozhiner is a misnaget. So he's attacking the Hasidim. So he says, how can they make kiddush on schnapps? That's like making kiddush over a bowl of soup. You can't make kiddush over an oichel. He takes the same svara. He lived before. Kosher Glover was killed by the Nazis in the Second World War. Chaim Volozhiner was in the 1800s. So he says it doesn't make sense. That schnapps is an oichel. It's bechlam not a mashke. In order to be considered chamar medina, the first step it has to be a beverage. So he tells that schnapps is bechlam not a mashke. It's an oichel.
It's also the loishoichel dam, we say, not a sichtu dam.
Right.
That is one of the mashke in the kamtum.
Okay. Okay.
There's a contradiction there.
Not exactly. Not exactly. Dam, the shear of dam is kazayis.
Kazayis.
Because it's considered an oichel, right? People who drink dam don't drink it because it's a beverage. They drink it because they feel that it's healthy. It's like soup. Dam is like soup.
So brokha karon on
soup.
I know on schnapps. You have you make kiddush on schnapps.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make a brokha karon on it.
That's what many poskim hold. You got to say bracha achrona, even though you only had a kazayis. Shabbos, what's the bracha achrona? What's the bracha rishona? That's what some argue the bracha rishona should be mezainis. Because Tosis raises the question: why don't we say mezainis on beer? Because on vegetable soup, you say ha'adama, even if you strained out all the vegetables, you say ha'adama, because the main flavor of the vegetable soup is from the cooking of the vegetables. So Tosis is bothered with the question: why shouldn't beer be mezainis? So Tosis says, no, that's a rule. All beverages are shahakal. They have a gemara. All beverages are shahakal. So if you're going to say that schnapps is not a beverage, schnapps is a meichel, then you should go back to Tosis kasha. It should be mezainis when you drink schnapps. That's an interesting question. If you say b'diavad shahakal for sure, you might say, but l'chatchila should probably. It could well be that the bracha should really be bar min mezainis.
Did you say if you eat on Yom Kippur, you don't make kiddush?
Right. Generally, as soon as Shulchan Aruch, you don't say
kiddush. But it's a Yom Kippur. I mean,
whenever
the riot,
yeah, for sure it's a Yom Kippur. Yeah, but it's assumed that there are different opinions in Shulchan Aruch. But the generally accepted opinion is that the Chacham, whenever the Sakan and Mitzvah, they recite kiddush, because under normal circumstances, we want everybody to be healthy and to fast on Yom Kippur. Whenever the Sakan to recite kiddush,
so the commissioner for sure would not.
Right, does not apply. Right.
What
do you mean by a Sakana Svek Sveka? The Gemara has a case like that, the end of human. Even if there's a far-fetched Svek Sveka. Yeah. It's a Sakana if the fellow has this condition or not. We're laymen. We're not doctors. So it's a Safek if he has this condition. And even people who have that condition, it's not a Vadai that they're going to die. So are we permitted to eat on Yom Kippur because he may have the condition and that condition may be life-threatening. So even if it's a sfek sveka, also you have to go l'chumra for the litzad, the pikuach nefesh. You have to do whatever is necessary. Many times the rabbonim don't have the necessary information to determine whether any condition is considered really a chodesh yesh b'sakana, chodesh ein b'sakana. As Rabbi Soloveitchik said, we're fortunate that we have a Jewish medical school and we have B'nai Torah who will be able to determine. Here Dr. Greijau happens to be here this evening, published a very important essay, Guidelines for Fasting for People Who Have Diabetes. So it's not so poshut that every person who has diabetes is a chodesh yesh b'sakana that they have to eat on Yom Kippur. So you should ask your local Orthodox doctor rather than your local Orthodox rabbi and make sure the doctor has researched the topic well. It's taka serious. We generalize a lot of times. People have this myth, they think that pregnant women are allowed to eat on Yom Kippur. The Gemara says not so. The Gemara says that pregnant and nursing women have to fast on Yom Kippur. And the other Tanaisim, and on Sar Batavis, and some Gedalim, Shavasa Batamas, we say whoever, if a woman is pregnant, or a woman is nursing, So he right away declared the woman as a chayla she'ein basakana, and chayla she'ein basakana is permitted to eat. But to eat on Tisha B'Av, you don't have to be a chayla she'ein basakana. To eat on Tisha B'Av, a chayla she'ein basakana is also permitted to eat. But we don't, Tisha B'Av is more serious than Shabbos HaBetam, is more serious than Tzom Gedalia. So the Gemara says we wouldn't declare automatically every nursing mother or every pregnant woman is automatically declared as a chayla she'ein basakana. We'll have to judge each and every individual case. Is the woman able to function normally? Then she's not a chayla she'ein basakana. If her condition is such that she can't function normally, then she's allowed to eat on Tisha B'Av. On Yom Kippur, that's not even enough. On Yom Kippur, you're only permitted to eat if you're a chayla she'ein basakana. So usually a nursing woman or a pregnant woman is not a chayla she'ein basakana. Now in Eretz Yisrael, because of the climate, so they say that a lot of the women who are pregnant, a lot of normal healthy people become dehydrated, even though they're eating, even though they're not fasting. On a regular day, they dehydrate and everything without even realizing it. So that's why many rabbanim tend to, in Eretz Yisrael, they tend to be makel that all the pregnant women should eat on Yom Kippur. More correct really should be, if you're not in Eretz Yisrael, you're in America, so there's really no heter at all. More correct should be that women should stay in an air-conditioned room and they should make sure that they rest the whole day on whoever has any slight choler. They shouldn't daven so much. They should stay home and daven b'chidus. And they should just stay the Shemoneh Esrei instead of saying all those pivotim. And they stay in an air-conditioned room. Make sure that they drink a lot before the Tanis begins. I remember once hearing on the radio some non-Jewish doctor was explaining that the Jewish people knew the secret already from centuries ago, that they drink chicken soup before Yom Kippur because the chicken soup has salt in it and the salt helps the body retain the liquid for longer so they won't dehydrate, and that's the secret how they survive through Yom Kippur. So make sure you drink a lot of chicken soup, that's all. In the last Perek in Yuma, the Mishnah talks about a pregnant woman who has a Safik Sakana, so she has to eat on Yom Kippur. So the commentaries have the dispute. Who is the Sakana for? Is it a Sakana for the mother? She may lose her life. Or the Sakana for the fetus? Yeah, the Rosh says by us it does make a difference. If the woman is going to have a miscarriage, so it's a Safik Sakana for the woman also. And anyway, we paskin, even if we know for sure, let's say the woman is under medical care, she's in the hospital, and the doctors know that there's no sakana for her, there's only a sakana for the fetus. So we make all on that too. We pass on that a suffix sakana for the fetus is also considered a suffix sakana. In Shulchan Aruch, there's no psak. This was a famous dispute in the days of the Rishonim. Shulchan Aruch doesn't take a stand at all, very strange. But the Chazon Ish writes, there's no psak, so we have to go lekula. We have to say that even suffix sakana to the fetus is also doicha Yom Kippur. The Mishnah mentions that Rosh Hashanah is the Yom Adin. The Rabban Shalom judges all of mankind on Rosh Hashanah. So the Ramban has a drasha that he delivered when he arrived in Eretz Yisrael. He had this famous dispute in Spain about the Jewish religion versus the Christian religion. He won the dispute, but he had to leave Spain because he had humiliated the Christian religion. So he went to Eretz Yisrael. He was always interested in going to Eretz Yisrael. So when he came to Eretz Yisrael, he found a minion of people, and he gave a long drasha on Rosh Hashanah. It must have been 5 hours long. So he wrote up the drasha that he gave. He covered the whole Maseches Rosh Hashanah from the beginning to the end in this. So Rabbanim today don't give such long drashas. So the first topic that he raises is, where did the rabbis get this idea from that Rosh Hashanah is the Yom HaDin? It never says anywhere in Tanakh. Where did this tradition come from? So he writes, and the Ran, in his commentary on the Rif, quotes this also from the Ramban, that it says in the Psikta like that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Adam HaRishon on Rosh Hashanah. We say, Zahayam Tchilas Masech is currently Yom Rishon. Adam HaRishon was commanded on Rosh Hashanah not to eat from the Eitz Hadas, and he sinned on the same day, and he was judged by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then the Rabban Shalom told him that just like I judge you today, so too I will judge your descendants every year on this day, on Rosh Hashanah. So the Ramban writes that this was an oral tradition from the days of Adam HaRishon. It's not from the Torah Shabbat Pes, not given to Moshe Rabbeinu. This was all the nations of the world knew this tradition from the days of Adam HaRishon. The Mabit adds on, and his Sefer Mabit was a contemporary of Rabbi Yosef Karo in the 1500s. He lived in Sfas. He was a Sephardic rabbi. All the rabbis, all the Jews in Eretz Yisrael at that time were Sephardic. There were no Ashkenazim in Eretz Yisrael at that time. Ashkenazim still lived in Eastern Europe. So the Mabit writes in his Sefer Beis Elokim, a Sefer on Hashkofe, Machshove. So he writes that the institution of Aseres made Shuvas for all of mankind also. That the rabbis of the Talmud say, Dirsha Hashem Behimotza, we should search out God at that season of the year that He makes Himself more available. And this is a reference to Aseres made Shuva. So it's not only for the Jewish people. Aseres made Shuva is for the non-Jews as well. The Rabban Shlomim told Adam Arishan that the day of judgment is Rosh Hashanah, and then he gives everyone an opportunity to, he gives us a better chance of doing tshuva in the Aseres Mei Tshuva. So this concept applies to all the people of the world as well. The fact that Yom Kippur is a special day of Mechilas Slicha, that would appear from the Psukim or from the Mishnah, that that's only for the Jewish people. That doesn't apply to the non-Jews. That's why Rabbi Akiva comments in the Mishnah, he says, based on the Pasuk in the Chumash, so Rabbi Akiva says, Ashrechem Yisrael, it's the praises of the Jewish people. You're being purified by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Rabbi Akiva says that that seems to be something unique to the Jewish people. Yom Kippur is a special day. Yom Kippur is one of the Aseres Mei Tshuva that applies to the whole world. Everyone, Jews and non-Jews alike, have a better opportunity to do tshuva during the Aseres Mei Tshuva than the rest of the year. But that Yom Kippur is that we are in a state of Lefnei Hashem, so that the psukim seem to indicate that's only for the Jewish people. Yom Kippur was the day that Moshe Rabbeinu came down with the Luch HaShnias. That was the day that HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed the Yud Gimel Midas, Hashem Hashem Kerachim Echanan, when He forgave the Jewish people for having sinned with the Chet HaEgel. So Yom Kippur was designated as a day Mechilo Slicha, that was specifically for the Bnei Yisrael. So the Psukim in the Chumash seem to indicate that it's because it's Lefnei Hashem Titor, there's a special Inyan of Hashras HaShchina on Yom Kippur, more so than all year long. We have different minhagim to indicate that this is so. When Yom Kippur comes to a close, so we recite seven times Hashem Hu Elokim. What is that all about? But we don't even believe in the Trinity. So what are we saying seven times Hashem Hu Elokim? Which, what does this number seven correspond to? So Tosis explains that it corresponds to the seven heavens. The Gemara in Chagiga points out the Shiva Rikim. And the Shechina was here the whole duration of the 24-25 hours of Yom Kippur. So we are greeting the Shechina as it's going back to heaven, to the first heaven, second heaven, third, till the seventh heaven. So we say seven times Hashem Hu Elokim, we're bidding the Shechina farewell. And that's the popular explanation as to why we blow shofar when Yom Kippur comes to a close, because at the conclusion of Maamar HaSinai, the Pasuk says, when the shofar would be blasting, Hema Yala Bahar, when the people will hear, when Jewish people will hear in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, that the shofar will be sounded. So there was the shofar was blowing on the occasion of Maamar HaSinai, and then the Shechina was there for a while, and then after the whole Maamar HaSinai was all over, the Shechina went away, so then the shofar blasted to indicate that the Hashras HaShechina is no longer there. Now everyone can climb up on HaSinai. Kozman the Shechina was there, was prohibited to climb up. So we blow shofar on Matzah Yom Kippur also, the different reasons, but this is a popular explanation, that the Kiyah shofar on Matzah Yom Kippur is to indicate the fact that there's a Sivuk Shechina. We usher in Yom Kippur by reciting Kol Nidre. So that's a big question. What is that all about? Why do we recite Kol Nidre to introduce Yom Kippur? So the different explanations are given. So one of the interesting, they're all very interesting explanations. Why do we recite Yom Kippur on Erev? Why do we recite Kol Nidre on Erev Yom Kippur? So Soloveitchik added an additional suggestion, that the whole koyach of the kapara of Yom Kippur is because there's a special added Hashras HaShechina, and by being close with Hashem, lifnei Hashem titoru, lifnei miyatim etarem. Rabbi Kiva says, based on the pasuk, we get a kapara by being in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there's a special Hashras HaShechina on Yom Kippur, so if you want to be moisif mechoyel al HaKadosh, you want to introduce Yom Kippur earlier, how will we succeed in getting the Shechina to be with us earlier? So Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, there's a din in the Gemara that whenever we have a bezin, we assume that the Shechina will be there. Elokim nitza ba'das kel. The Shechina is always present if you have an honest bezin. If you have three crooked people putting together, making a bezin, so the Shechina is not going to come join with them. But if you have an honest to goodness bezin who are trying to come up with an honest to goodness psak, so the Shechina will be there to help them paskin. So not only is this true when the bezin is trying to paskin a shaila and a din Torah and the imamunis, we assume Sod Hashem Lireyav, even when a rabbi is paskening a shaila, also the Rabban Shalom will come and give him a divine assistance that he should pasken properly. So when you have a bezin for Hathoras and Dorim also, even though it's not that complicated, they don't have to know how to learn so well, still we assume that there will be a hashuas hashchina. So Rav Soloveitchik thought maybe that's the reason why we start off. There are so many different explanations. Maybe this is the explanation. We want to start off Yom Kippur with a hataras nedarim. So this, the whole essence of the koyach hakapara of Yom Kippur is because the shechina is there. So we force the shechina to come earlier by making hataras nedarim. We convene a bezin. We make hataras nedarim. So whenever you convene a bezin, HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises Elokim Nitzah Ba'adas Kel, that he will be there. So that's the special inyan of Yom Kippur, that we have Mechilas Avonis, because of the fact that we are in the state of Lifnei Hashem. We are in the presence of the Hashuas HaShechina.
But isn't Hataras Nedarim referring to the past, and Kol Nidri is referring to the future?
The old version of Kol Nidri always used to be Yom Kippurim Shavar, Yom Kippurim Hazeh, that it's a Hataras Nedarim for the past. And then the Rabbeinu Tam and his father, Rabbeinu Meir, Rabbeinu Meir was the son-in-law of Rashi, and Rabbeinu Tam was the grandson of Rashi. So they thought that that's not correct. They thought the text should be a declaration for the Nedarim that we're going to take in the course of the coming year. Yom Kippurim Zed, Yom Kippurim Haba Leinu L'Toyva. So in different Machzorim you have different versions. The Chayodim used to be in Lithuania. The Chayodim was like the Bible. He was dying in Vilna. He was a Mechutna in the Vilna Gaon. So the Chayodim recommends you should combine the both versions together. The Chazan and Yeshiva, that's what the Chazan says. We speak about the Nedarim that we took, Mir Kippurim Shava Ad Yom Kippurim Hazeh. We want to make a Hataras Nedarim for the Nedarim we took in the past year. We want to make a declaration that the Nedarim we plan to take in the course of the coming year, Yom Kippurim Zed, Yom Kippurim Haba Leinu L'Toyva, till next year, should also be null and void. So we really do both. It's a Hataras Nedarim for the past and a declaration for the Nedarim in the future that they shouldn't be valid.
Does the Besdin have any authority over the vows in the future?
Right. You only need a bezdin. We have two people standing next to the chazan to constitute a bezdin. You only need a bezdin if you're talking about the nedarim that were made in the past. So we say that version, Yom Kippurim Shavah, Yom Kippurim Hazeh, and that's why we have two people standing next to the chazan to convene a bezdin to make the hataras nedarim. In the weekday davening that we say all year long, we recite in the middle of the Shemoneh Esrei, we offer the bakoshes. We offer our requests from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the first request we make is, give us a little more seichel. Everyone can use a little more seichel. Then we ask, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bring us back to the Torah and give us the ability to do tshuva. So the commentaries on the Siddur point out that apparently the way to do tshuva is by coming back to learning the Torah. That's how the Midrashim say. If a person was in the practice of learning an hour a week and he wants to do tshuva, let him learn 2 hours a week. If a person is in the practice of learning one perek a week, let him learn 2 prokim a week. Whatever a person learns, the person goes to one shir in the course of the week, so let him go to an extra shir. The more a person learns, so the more a person, men and women and children, everybody, become closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu by learning his Torah. Because our tradition has it that the Torah is not merely a collection of laws. It is a collection of laws that have to be observed, but that's not the whole story. Our tradition has it, based on Pesukim and Tanakh, that the Torah is a description of the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There are some laws in the Torah that the Talmud says never came up, never will come up. One Tana says that there never was and never will be a Bayis HaMenuga. What we were talking about before, Hashoy B'Bayis HaMenuga. One Tana says there never was and never will be. One says there never was and there never will be Ben Sora Mora, one says there never was, never will be a Nira Nidachas. The conditions are so complicated, it's never going to happen. So why did God include it in the collection of laws? It doesn't make sense. The human being doesn't write laws that are never going to happen. They have, each state has a constitutional convention every couple of years, and they update the laws in the constitution of the state. So whatever laws applied in the 1700s that are outdated, so they delete them. But it doesn't make sense for a human being to put in a law that never was and never will be. So the Rebbe Shalom put in three laws, one or two or three laws in the Torah that never were and never will be. It doesn't make any sense. So the Baal HaTanya explains in his Sefer that the most of the mitzvahs have to be observed. And then some of them are just for the purpose of completing the picture of Elokus. We have a tradition that all of the laws of the Torah give us a full description of the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Different psukim in Tanakh that indicate like that. So that's what we assume. Hashiveinu avinu l'sarasecha, hachzireinu b'tshuva shleimu l'fanecha. By learning more Torah, we will get to become closer with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and thereby it will be easier for us to do tshuva. The whole idea of doing tshuva is becoming closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I'm sure there are... This is not the only shiur in the neighborhood. I'm sure there are more shiurim in the neighborhood. this group of people are people who appreciate learning, so you should try to attend more shiurim. Whoever attends one shiur should attend two shiurim. Everyone should learn a little bit more, and thereby tshuva is not overnight. Tshuva is a long process. We become closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu by becoming more familiar with His Torah. So we should all pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This year we need, we have a big sakana for Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael and America, all over the world. Big sakana. So we have a lot to pray for, and we have a lot to work on ourselves to do tshuva. Agmar Chasim Eteva, good Geben Shtiyon. Thank you. Thank you for the drink.